Downloads of the show are available at Podomatic.com or the Podomatic mobile app. Hey kids, you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. Today is Tuesday, December 12, 2017, and oh boy, did New York City dodge the proverbial bullet, or should I say pipe bomb today, as there was an attempted suicide bombing in the subway in Port Authority that didn't happen because the bomb didn't go off properly. Ooh, well, we'll have some more to say about this a little bit later, but right now I want to wash myself fresh and clean from this day with this song from Outkast from their Stankonia album in 2000. Pendergrass, cooler than Freddie Jackson, sipping a milkshake in a snowstorm. That felt warm in the dorm room at the AU. We pay two athletes, might cake you, but you must have been mistaken with them statements that you make, huh?
On display, go hooked it up. Oh my god, dip my rim today. So ride out to the honeycomb, hide out. I'ma show you how to wild out like Jack Tripper. Let me be Bambino on your slippers, YKK on your zipper. Lick you like a lizard when I'm slizzard or sober. 6 million ways to fold ya. Like Noah's, I get twos of you's and you get pretty deep. But I call you from 80s. I know you'll be there for me, girl.
Running off at their mouth and telling me everything that's on your nasty mind. They say you're malnutritioned and need a vitamin D and inviting me to that tingle in your spine. I love who you are, love who you ain't. You're so Anne Frank. Let's hit the attic to hide out for about 2 weeks. Rick James and no chains and whips. I still hips jerk and double time. The boy next door's a freak. Ha ha ha.
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. Yes, that was Outkast with So Fresh, So Clean from their Stankonia album back in 2000. And yeah, I wanted to wash myself fresh and clean from this morning when I woke up and turned on New York One to see if the R train was running okay and found out that somebody tried to blow up a bomb on themselves, suicide bomb, inside Port Authority train station early this morning, around 7:30 or so, and the bomb didn't go off all the way. It only went off partially, so the person got hurt. They are alive. They are caught. Three other people ended up getting caught with non-life-threatening injuries, and it could have been a lot worse. A lot worse. Now, I know there's a lot of people that are, like, basically salivating, waiting for New York City to get hit bad for whatever reason that's going to advance their agenda or so they can promulgate whatever whatever idea that they want to in the world. But I want to remind people, especially those of us that are in the New York area, that stuff has happened before. This is not the first time that the subway has even been targeted. Back in the, there was the FALN bombing. I don't know. I don't think they bombed the subway, but they set bombs in other places in New York and people were killed in the late 60s and 70s. There was a group called the Weathermen that blew up an entire townhouse across the street from Washington Square Park in the late 60s. And going all the way back to the 1940s and 50s, people, okay? Like back. There was this poor excuse of a human named George Metesky, otherwise known as the Mad Bomber, as the tabloids called him. He was a former Con Edison worker who had a grudge, and he left 33 homemade pipe bombs over a 16-year period in everywhere from phone booths to storage lockers to public restrooms and movie theaters. Yeah, 33 bombs over 16. It's like 2 bombs a year. Luckily, well, not luckily, but only 22 of them, well, only, well, 22 of the 33 exploded and scores of people were injured. I don't know if anybody died. I couldn't find it online, but amazingly or not, there was even a copycat bomber, another Con Ed employee with a grudge in the 1950s that left another couple of homemade bombs. Hopefully that led Con Ed to take better care of its employees. And yeah, it even happened in the 90s. In fact, in barely 1 year after the first World Trade Center bombing, the first World Trade Center bombing in February of 1993, some man, never a woman, it's a man, brought a homemade Molotov cocktail type bomb onto the subway, onto the 4 train by Fulton Street, and it prematurely ignited on him, and it injured more than 40 people, 4 of whom were critically injured. And later it was disclosed a previous firebomb he ignited on another subway car the week before. Yeah, he ignited another. So, like, he tried to bomb the train twice. And I don't know. To me, the best thing, the most ironic thing is I saw a post on social media that was captioned, "Panic New Yorkers fleeing the Port Authority after bombing and everyone is still riding." Only, yeah, everyone is still riding because the photograph showed people calmly, 2x2 on an escalator, just looking pissed off, like, okay, I'm not dead, but now I'm late. And, you know, somehow I think that the person that made that post was not a native, because what I have found, and hey, it's only one redhead's opinion, but that if you can survive 5th grade in New York City, you can survive anything. And speaking of surviving, well, not surviving, thriving. Let's take a listen to this song, picked by this week's guest artist, especially for this episode. And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. Nothing like Prince to turn a mood around, huh? Oh my God, I'm so bummed that he left the planet way too soon. Yes, that was Prince. Baby, I'm a Star from Prince's Purple Rain album back in 1984. And now, guess what, kids? It's time for my favorite part of the show. Whoa, whoa. Everybody, welcome to Fish Out of Agua's Guest Artist of the Week. Woohoo!
Yay.
We are here again sitting with one of my favorite people. And yes, I know, every week I say that the person is my favorite. But it's true. As you all know, everyone is Michelle Carlo's favorite on Fish Out of Agua.
And
anyway,
everyone loves Michelle.
Oh, thank you. So I'm sitting here with the amazing, illustrious, and accomplished actor, writer, stand-up comedian, storyteller, director. Like, what else do you do? Do you sing and dance and cook?
I do sing, and I'll be at Don't Tell Mama singing.
Oh, my God. Burlesque? Do you do burlesque?
No.
Do you clean houses?
Barely.
All right. Enough of the hyphenates and slashes. Please welcome to Fish Out of Agua, Rhonda Handsome.
I am so happy to be here with you.
Yes. We've been trying to get this together for a long time, and you know, now is the time for action.
It's
because
happening.
Yeah, our days are not promised. So.
Yes. So every day is precious.
Any day I open my eyes is a good day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I say.
It is.
Yes. And speaking of days, so we've known each other for a number of days.
Yes.
I would even say a number of. years.
Yes. Dare I say decades? We know each other since the last century.
Yes. I believe it was the turn of the century, and a mutual acquaintance, friend, collaborator that we knew called Emmy Gay.
Emmy Gay had her tea party, and she was writing very political stuff for women. And
very prolific political women's theater.
Yes.
In the arts.
Yeah.
When people weren't doing that.
Not that much, but Dixon Place
much.
Was a big supporter of hers.
Yes.
And
I remember us rehearsing at Charas El Bohio.
Oh, yeah.
Old school, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was a rough time for all of us to get through, but we were doing our art. And I think that's an important thing for all of us to have that to hold on to.
Yeah.
It was during that post 9/11,
yes,
but it was a wonderfully creative time.
Yeah. And then, you know, 9/11 came and changed everything. It changed everything for the entire universe.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something, Michelle. Frequently, during the time that we're living in now, I feel like my reality has shifted because of the manipulation of fake news and the mind games that are going on with the administration. It's hard.
Well, and also with social media. I think social media is playing us too, to be honest.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
We're just being played.
We are.
Played like an accordion, a xylophone, and a violin.
Yeah, and an oompa band.
Yeah.
But there is a certain condition of mind control and hive mentality that is very frightening around social media.
Well,
it really is an unfortunate
possibility.
Yeah,
this is like the Wild West days of the internet. It's just like, I feel like we're in Tombstone, Arizona
at
the OK Corral here.
It's wild. It really is wild. And I feel like, personally, that sexual assault is horrible, and the only thing that is worse than sexual assault is a false accusation, which was done routinely to black men on a regular basis.
Yes.
You know,
always.
God forbid if they actually looked at a woman, or if he winked or whistled or did not do it, a man could be killed on a railroaded, empty accusation.
But we could spend the rest of our time here listing the name of every single man that we could think of from starting from the beginning of the 20th century that was wrongly accused.
Yes.
I mean, and I don't even talk about like the 1800s and going for. I mean, forget it. We would be here forever. We would not get on with our conversation, and we kind of need to. Oh, I have so much outrage. I want to bite this recorder now.
I've got outrage fatigue.
No, that's what social media does. It just like makes you go rah
all the time.
You know,
you know, Michelle,
seriously?
It's funny that you say that. I'm very excited about the art and the creations, the productions, the films, the web series that are going to be coming up that tackle this.
Yes.
You know,
so much art is tackling it now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ironic that they call it social media, but ultimately you're alone.
It's antisocial.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Let's take the Wayback Machine back. We sound like two comely curmudgeons here. Get off my sidewalk. Vete. Nadia Kiriaki. Bang. Okay. So, Rhonda, since nobody exists in the vacuum, why don't you tell us what launched you onto this trajectory to you being this multi/hyphenate powerhouse of sparkle? Are you from New York?
And I am.
Right.
I am originally from Bed-Stuy, a Brooklyn gal. Bed-Stuy, do or die, mostly die.
Oh, snap. What street?
Spencer Place, Fulton Street, Gates Avenue, Putnam Avenue. Oh, I lived all
Murder
around
Avenue?
There.
Murder Avenue?
Murderers.
Excuse me. For those who don't know, Myrtle Avenue was once called Murder Avenue.
Yeah, but actually where I lived in Bed-Stuy recently is now a multi-million dollar row. And I have a whole sorry tale of gentrification, which I won't go into right now.
Weren't there blocks of those brownstones back in the day that was like a kind of Brooklyn Strivers Row that were owned by African Americans?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And West Indian Americans and mm-hmm. just like, yeah.
And but now they are, they have changed hands, they have changed complexion, and I have moved to the Bronx. So.
you moved to where I escaped from.
Yes, darling, I am in the South Bronx. So.
Oh, my God.
It's a whole new situation
It's not what they're trying to call the piano district.
No.
Oh, Sobro.
No, I don't know what the hell they're calling it, but that's where I am. But I started out in Bed-Stuy, a good little Catholic girl going to Catholic school at St. Virgin in the Bushes. And
for real? Is that the real name?
No, that's a joke.
I would believe that.
I actually went to Brooklyn College to be a sociologist. I was a sociology major with a minor in performing arts. And when I got to statistics, I said, I've got math anxiety. I can't deal with the statistics. And I switched my major with my minor. And then I went on to do puppetry with Jim Henson.
Really?
And yeah, the Muppets, yes. Jim Henson and Frank Oz taught me puppetry. And
I am genuflecting on the air, people. I am like genuflecting. Head on the floor.
Yeah, and I was with the Muppets on the first show of Saturday Night Live. And that is where I get my credit of Saturday Night Live, because I was on that first live show with the Muppets playing Vosh, the scullery maid. And then I went on to continue in puppetry, touring with Pickwick Puppets and actually playing with life-size puppets and a full symphony orchestra. And for a term or two, I was actually secretary of the Greater New York Puppetry Guild, the Puppetry Guild of Greater New York.
Oh my God, I would never have known, and I know you for a long time.
You know me for a long time.
And I never knew that about you. Did you work on the actual Muppet Show? It's time to put on makeup.
No, we were.
That was my favorite show when I was a kid.
A whole new thing to go on to Saturday Night Live. I had actually started being trained by them to do huge shows in Madison Square Garden in venues that were really big. So
wow.
So you were inside whatever the shape, it was more abstract, or almost a little bit like Mummenschanz. And I was very excited because it was a physical thing. You'd be using your whole body. And then one day I came into the workshop and they said, we're going to change our trajectory. We're going to be using a monitor. So instead of my whole body, I was just using from my elbow to the tips of my fingers and using my voice.
Wow. That was a big change.
And it was kind of scary for me because it meant you looked in the monitor and then you had to walk or move the opposite way that the monitor showed you. I have geographic dyslexia, so it took me a while to get that together. But then I did that for a while, and then I felt like I missed acting, and I wasn't getting acting jobs, and I could still use some acting jobs, actually. And I said, let me do stand-up comedy, because I had seen people doing it, and I said, I could do that, and I want the agents to get to know what I could do. And the stand-up comedy actually took off for me when I got representation, and by the way, I am looking for representation now, but at the time, I had great representation and toured with major musical acts like Diana Ross and Anita Baker and Smokey Robinson. Yeah, what a cutie.
Oh my God. Mr. Green Eyes.
Yeah, he's really sweet.
He's still alive, right?
Yes, he is.
He better be.
He is. But I toured with major musical acts. I worked the Catskills and the bungalow colonies in the Catskills.
Which don't exist anymore.
Well, there's just a few of them hanging on. And then I love doing Vegas and Tahoe and Reno, all the resorts. And I'd love to be back there because I made good money.
Wait.
I really made good money.
Wait. Vegas, and were you a showgirl too?
No, I did stand-up. Oh. I was always opening for musical acts.
I can kind of picture
there.
You as a showgirl.
Well, I used to dress like one, actually. I did.
You didn't have to send me a photograph.
I was one of the few women doing comedy who I always had on the false eyelashes. And at the time, I had what some people called a weed whacker hairdo. Like, it was six multicolors, and it looked like buckwheat on crack. And,
oh, my God.
But it was very stylish, and it was unique to me because I was trying to make myself individual from all the other comics who the women were, wearing suspenders and.
Well, they're trying to look like Mork from Orca.
Yes, they were all trying to look like Robin.
I remember those rainbow suspenders.
Yeah. So I had a designer make all my costumes. I had lots of fancy couture costumes. Always wore high heels, false eyelashes, all of that. And one of my favorite things was being at Radio City Music Hall and, come out of the train and see my name up in lights up there, Rhonda Handsome. It first said Anita Baker, and then it said with Rhonda Handsome, but my name was so long I couldn't even catch my breath looking at that marquee.
Oh, my God.
It was really great.
What an amazing feeling that must have been.
It was.
So where did you get this performance bug from? Do you come from an artistic family?
Yes, my mother, God bless her soul, my mother was a painter, basically self-taught. She did try to take a few lessons, but she actually studied acting with the Negro, and she had a Negro Actors Guild card. After she passed, I went through her
stuff.
There was a Negro Actors Guild.
Is that like the Negro Leagues in the baseball?
But for acting, yes.
It was segregated like that?
Well, yeah, because they were not putting black people on Broadway or even off Broadway, and we had to make our own way. But my mother, and I remember one of my stories I actually talk about, that my mother used to say, she went to acting class in the Village with Tony Curtis and Harry Belafonte. And when I found her Negro Actors Guild card, I said, maybe that woman was actually telling the truth. But she was multi-talented. She was very intelligent. And she came from the rural South, and she really made her way on the mean streets of New York. And she encouraged me to express myself. And when I saw what she was doing, I guess it was just sort of transferred to me.
I want to know more about the Negro Actors Guild. So there was no actors' equity back then? Or was there white equity and black equity?
This was quite some time ago. I didn't even know anything about it until she had passed, long after she passed. I found these things in her effects. And it was really quite startling. And also, it gave me such a warm feeling about her. And like I was actually carrying on some of the things that she had wanted to do. My mother would stand outside our house and go, "You see that plane up there? I'm in that plane on my way to Japan." And she never did it. But you know what? My son, her grandson, actually spent 3 years in Japan teaching English. And I felt like, well, she got there somehow.
She manifested it.
She made it happen.
So When I met you, you were directing. Yes. I didn't know you as a, I knew you were a stand up later. But you directed under another name.
Passion. And my website
Passionetta,
is directedbypassion.com. Yes. Well, passionetta@excite.com was my first email address.
That sounds like some kind of 90s like sex chat room.
And it wasn't really, but I directed under Passion. And actually, last night was a very exciting remembrance of all of that because I was the host of an event celebrating Black theater and the passing of the torch from the artists who now to those who we expect to keep our vibrant artistry alive in the future. And I was with people like Woody King Jr., who I have directed for his New Federal Theater many times. And the honoree of the night was Douglas Turner Ward, who founded the Negro Ensemble Company. And I was just delighted to be part of that because it reminded me that I was actually on Broadway with the Negro Ensemble Company. I was an intern with them when they were off Broadway, and when the River Niger moved to Broadway, I went with them as an assistant to the wardrobe mistress. So I was thrust into a professional world of magnificent actors and had an extraordinary experience at that time. And then to be able to honor Douglas Turner Ward hosting the evening, he was the main event at a night where people like Richard Wesley, a phenomenal writer, was there, Brenda Denmark, an actress, Frankie Faison, Barbara Montgomery. I mean, just a cavalcade of stars of Black theater, and feeling like I'm in my firmament, I'm with my theater family, and to feel so blessed that I had an opportunity to share my life and my artistry with all of these folks. And I actually ran into Jerome Preston Bates, who gave the invocation. Jerome is not only a reverend, but he is an incomparable actor who I directed in Real Black Men Don't Sit Cross-Legged on the Floor. And that won, yes, that won, and I know, it's a real moniker, but it won an Adelco Best Ensemble Award.
Wow.
And Jerome and I are working on another piece that he says may go to Sundance. So, you know,
Sundance Theater Lab.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, you know, I really felt blessed last night,
yeah,
and connected with my theater family. And as you know, I'm actually new in the storytelling community,
yes,
and I am having such a great time.
I've been seeing your name in a lot of places,
yeah,
for storytelling,
yeah,
so you're really like blossoming in this area as
but
well.
But you know who really encouraged me to do that? Nancy Giles. Do you know her? Nancy Giles has the mosquito at Dixon
Place.
Oh,
yes. She works at CBS.
Yes, she does.
My boyfriend knows her.
Nancy and I go way back, and she said to me, we used to have lunch a lot when I lived in Tribeca. She says, you have so many crazy stories you used to tell me. You should do storytelling. And she had me come to the mosquito, and that's really what encouraged me. And she kept saying, do more. Yeah, I will always be indebted to her for getting me really on the storytelling.
Isn't it amazing when people help each other, when women help women?
I love it.
You know?
I absolutely love it, Michelle.
It's just amazing. Like so many times, I think, in our lives, when we realize what's gotten us or introduced us to the next thing or the next step, oftentimes it was the encouragement of another woman.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even mean that they needed to be like your bestie or anything. It could have been somebody who was like just a marginal acquaintance you were having a conversation with over a bottle of wine at
it's
a party.
Absolutely true.
One day.
And I am just so encouraged by the wonderful women that I know and the support that they extend, that we extend to each other. It is just, yeah, super. It's super.
Yes, it is super, and I actually believe that we are in the beginning of seeing the dismantling of that toxic masculinity culture the way the Berlin Wall was struck down in 1989.
Down comes the patriarchy.
Little by little, you know, somebody gets a little claw hammer, somebody brings a sledgehammer, somebody's going to drive a friggin' bulldozer right through it.
And some people have been going on it with a spoon constantly.
Yeah, spoon, fingernails.
But I hope that it's a sea change. I hope that it's a sea change for us to get together and be better to each other as human beings. And hopefully that will come, hopefully.
Now, you mentioned being a mom, Rhonda. Let's talk about your greatest production.
My big son, my big man, is a wonderful grown man, and he has a job with outreach to the homeless, and I am just so proud of him. He's, he's working, and he not only is he one of the most thoughtful men that I have experienced. He's also very funny, and I love him in my life because I like to be with him so he can keep me up on what the young people are doing.
Tell him to train you on IG. So explain a little bit of how you were able to juggle your artistic life with your professional life and your mom life.
Oh, that was very hard because we lived right here in Tribeca. Actually, he's still in the apartment that he grew up
in.
Were
you partnered then
single? Yes, his father and I were together for quite some time, and his father was a wonderful, wonderful father. But his father, and I do say this with all due respect, he was very jealous of my work.
And that happens a lot.
I do feel sadness around that. I have to be honest and tell you how much sadness I feel because...
Was he an artist also?
No, he was not, the furthest thing from it. But he was very... And I think if he had been an artist, he might have understood a little more how self-involved I was and how self-concerned I was and so, you know, all of that me. It was very challenging, and I remember when I spent some time in California, I was actually doing homework with my little boy who was like I think in the fourth or fifth grade at the time over the telephone from my agent's office, you know, trying to stay connected. When I was online waiting to pull a number at Catch a Rising Star or at the Improv, I had my son in the stroller standing online waiting to pull a number. And it really was a challenge. I had moments where I could actually be involved with his schools, with the PTA, and I did that as much as I could. I was actually president of the PTA at his junior high school. But it's not easy. It really isn't easy, and I'm sorry that what I felt I had to do for my career took me away from the isolation or the cocoon that my husband wanted to build for us.
Wow. I mean, what you've just described makes me think about, like, everything that you achieve. You sound like the quintessential, like, woman who can do it all that I was brought up thinking that I could be. Like, I'm a woman, Angelique. Now you know how old I am.
But I was very affected by this because I have felt on the cusp of so many movements. I have to tell
you
that.
And what do you think fell by the wayside?
For me, it was my family, you know, and we're coming up on the holidays, and I think of the traditions that I don't do now with my family. That's very difficult for me, but I do feel like there was a trick bag with the women's movement. I think there was a trick bag with that because, the feminists were pushing for certain things for and I say this with all due respect for white women. I feel like in my life and in my experience of where I was growing up, black women were always very self-possessed. They were always very forward-thinking. They were always looking to take care of the family. They were working and all of these things. And when the women's movement pushed certain things, they said, we can do this. A lot of the people, not all of them, but a lot of the people spearheading that movement had a certain financial underpinning that allowed them to do what they did, that allowed them to create the philosophy and to establish a lot of what has led to breakthroughs for women. if you have a certain kind of support system, you can afford to act out.
And explore. Because you have a safety net.
You have that safety net. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't have that. And I think we were trying to do that without the context of systemic misogyny, systemic racism. Yeah, so yeah. There's a lot of context that was missing and a lot of racism, I think.
In the women's movement.
In the women's movement itself. Well, even now, I get very concerned when I don't see the, quote, movement reacting to the death of people like, Sandra Bland or the numerous black trans women who are just, like, murdered by the scores, you know. I don't see the kind of support of that I would think would be current in 2017. But hopefully that will change.
Hopefully all those walls are going to be dismantled soon.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I feel like I'm getting the biggest education here. This is like the wow. I knew it for a long time, but I didn't know her at all. Now your latest project thing that you're doing is like you're on radio too.
Oh my God!
You have to talk about this.
I am, and thank you for bringing it up.
It's hell not, yeah!
I am on a wonderful show. I am on John Fugelsang's radio show called Tell Me Everything every Monday from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sirius XM channel 121. And it is the most thrilling thing going on in my life right now. And I have a pretty exciting life. John Fugelsang is an incredibly funny man, and his sidekick is Frank Conniff, who is just an extraordinary joke meister, very quick, very fast, and I have the honor of sitting in with them on Mondays. And what John has done to break up the sausage fest that is his show, he has women come in every day to rotate through the week, and I get the first day of the week, Mondays.
So you're the Monday girl.
Somebody on Twitter said they love handsome Mondays, and I said,
I love the sound
of that.
Hashtag that.
Handsome Mondays. And that's like a handsome man without the D.
So if you could describe that show in like one sentence, what would it be?
It is an exciting experience every time I'm there. He has he recognizes birthdays. He has a wonderful sound person playing very interesting, pertinent music, all genres. That's Jorge who does that. But then we deal with current events, whatever is going on. But then also he has great writers come in, people who are dealing with history, religion, philosophy, science. So there's a segment where, you know, that's dealt with. Then there's also popular culture and, of course, politics. Some days we actually get away with almost not mentioning the president. And then the last hour is called the attention deficit hour. And then other comics come in, and that's another treat. And then, of course, Frank Conniff is there, always with a zinger, always coming through with something that is clever, pertinent, and just hilarious.
And what are you doing? You just talked about everybody except yourself.
I'm doing my best to stay up with them. I really am. And I'll tell you something, Michelle, when I can make John or Frank laugh, I am in heaven. I sit there and try to wait for my moment to think of something something and then throw it in there, and when I see them crack up, I feel like, okay, my life is made. Because when you are with people who you admire so much and you know they really have their game on, it's just a pleasure to be in their company and learn. I absorb from them, so I get to actually connect with so many different types of people in a professional situation that I would never see otherwise. So I feel like I'm in the right environment. I'm in a good atmosphere with people that I admire, and I couldn't ask for more.
So basically, you're just making your living not shutting up. You're just like,
you know,
that's pretty cool.
I said that I wanted to be a sidekick, and it's funny because you were talking about speaking things into manifestation, and I'm actually I'm actually doing that now, and I have to say how grateful I am.
Yay! And you know what else I'm going to be grateful for?
What?
To hear what you have prepared for us. Oh, my God. Are you going to do a story? Are you going to read from, like, are you writing a book right now?
Not right now, but that should be coming sooner or later. But I do have a little story that I'd like to share. This is Reality Check. I walked the two blocks home from Kumquat, talking to myself. That's nothing new. Talking to myself, what with the seven voices vying for attention in my head. I was trying to process what had just happened. If my mother, God rest her soul, had done what I'd just done, would I have been embarrassed? It's 9 p.m. I marvel at the number of white faces crowding the Brooklyn A train as we passed Nostrand Avenue. I exited the Gentrification Express and made my way up the M.C. Ursher staircase of the Utica Avenue station. If I survive the steps, I treat myself to a quick drink, an appetizer, and call it a night. Successfully topside, I saw a martini in my future. The restaurant, Kumquat, not the real name, is of the new breed Bed-Stuy eateries with real flatware and not one sheet of plexiglass between me and the server. I have 6 receipts from Kumquat offering a 10% discount on future meals, weekends excluded, stuck on the refrigerator with a magnet that reads, all these years and still a fox. It figures I'd be here midweek without my discount coupons. No biggie, I'll have a drink and a snack and I'll be home in no time. The hostess seated me and I waited and waited. I scanned the room, no wait staff in sight. Earlier this week, daylight savings snatched an hour, and tonight in Kumquat, time was still evaporating. I did the crane neck index finger at half-mast gesture and got the distracted attention of the hostess. Are there any waiters on duty? Yes, she'll be right over. What's the soup of the day? I'll go find out. As she left, I thought, you'll go find out. It's almost closing time, and you don't know the soup du jour? I cleared my phone of 15 emails and decided to forego my drink by the time the hostess returned and announced, black bean with kale, how does that sound? Good, so that's what you'll have? I nodded yes. 3 emails later, my waitress appeared. I'm Kira, would you like something to drink? Well, when I came in, I did, but now, no. That's more head grumbling there. No, thank you, Kira, I'll just have some soup. The hostess may have put in my order. She mentioned the black bean with kale. I'll put that in for you now. Sounds like more waiting. I picked up my phone to quiet the restless toe tapping in my head. 2 emails later, my soup was on the table. It was indeed black bean and kale, but mammoth chunks of chicken jostled for room in the huge white bowl. I'm not complaining because a mass of smoked poultry lurked under every piece of kale. If I were still a practicing semi-vegetarian, I'd have been outraged by the surfeit of fowl in what had sounded like a hearty vegan potage. I forged through the gumbo with gusto, but pieces of chicken relentlessly mocked me from the enormous bowl. After seating 2 men, the hostess passed within arm's length and noticed my finger again at half-mast. I say, the soup had chicken, lots and lots of chicken. She paused, perplexed. I'm not complaining, it's just that you said black bean with kale and the soup had lots of chicken. She fixed her face and said, yes, there's chicken in it, but that's the way it's written up. Black bean with kale. No problem, I'll take my check. Bam, Kira materialized at my table. How was the soup? Actually, it was very good, but there was a lot of chicken in it. It was more like chicken with black beans and kale. Well, there's chicken in it, but that's the way it's written up. Black bean with kale. Anything else? No, thank you, Kira. Have a good night. She placed the check on my table and went into hiding. $6 for that giant bowl of soup, with 53 cents added for tax. No problem. Just above the discount incentive on the receipt was the suggested gratuity. 16%, leave $1.08. 20%, leave $1.20. Just to spite the blacks or bad tipper stereotype, I went all out and left $1.25 on the table. I'll pay the hostess at the door with a 20 and get on home. Well, she had been at the door when I rose from my table, but where was the hostess now? No Kira either, so I approached the bartender. I'd like to pay my check. Her face said, "This is not my job." Her mouth said, "I'll get your waitress." I checked messages until Kira returned from the hidden world where servers, well, hide. From behind the bar, she handed me 2 5s, 3 1s, returned my receipt, and went back into hiding. Now, the receipt total read $6.53, and I had $13 in hand. I have math anxiety, so several times I used my fingers to confirm I was short 47 cents. I offered the bartender my receipt and the money. "I'm short 47 cents change." She sighed. "Since the waiters don't carry nickels and dimes, they just round up." That's when one of the voices in my head, Penny Pincher, shouted, "What the fuck? That bitch just took money out of the cash register. Don't tell me there's not 47 cents in there." I ignored Penny's outburst and quietly said, "I'm short my change." She sighed. "I'll call your waitress." When Kira appeared barside, I calmly said, I'm short my 47 cents change. I kid you not. Kira tilted her head and said, "We round up." Now, I'll admit, I'm still catching up to the 21st century, but when did rounding up your bill become the norm? You round up without mentioning it to the customer? Kira set her jaw, veiled her eyes, but not her incredulous tone. "You want me to break a dollar?" Penny Pincher began stomping her feet, rocking her neck, and looking for the nearest exit out of my head to throttle Kira. I calmly replied, "Yes." For a reality check, I complained to the bearded brother sitting at the bar. "I'm short 47 cents because they rounded up. I want my change." From behind a shield of beef, lettuce, and bun, he murmured, "If that's what you want." Penny Pincher ignored the hint of dismissal dripping from his burger. In an effort to rile up the other voices in my head, Penny Pincher started to chant, "It's my money! It's my money!" Kira appeared before the other voices could pick up the mantra. She counted out 47 cents in coin and with a sullen thump, placed them and a dollar on the bar. "This is yours." "I gave you a generous tip."
"Did you?"
Kira shot down my feeble attempt to reason with a wait person I would likely encounter again. 7 cents short, I pushed Penny Pincher and Kira's dollar aside. I palmed the 40 cents and made my way into the night. Did I miss the news flash? Restaurants agree to round up your bill. Who gets the profit? Is it shared by the staff or goes straight to the owner? And why did Kira ask befuddled, "You want me to break a dollar for you?" "Hell yes, bitch, if it means I get my money," Penny Pincher shouted from the corner of my mind where she sat washing pennies plucked from restroom floors.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, did you see how many times I was going to like burst out laughing and I had to just like hold it in?
Thank you.
Oh my God. So if somebody wants to get in touch with your fabulousness and find out where you're going to be performing next, but like in general, people want to find out about you and where you're going to be, where do they go?
They can check me out on Facebook at Rhonda Handsome Comedy, and that's like a handsome man without the D, or on Twitter at Rhonda Handsome.
So once again, please mention when the show airs, the serious show.
Oh, the Tell Me Everything.
Tell Me Everything.
John Fugelsang show airs 2 to 5 p.m. weekdays, and it's Handsome Mondays when I'm there on Monday, 2 to 5 p.m. with John Fugelsang and the great Frank Conniff.
So in closing, I always ask this one question of everybody that I interview.
Oak tree.
Yeah, huh? Oak tree?
I thought you were going to say, well, if you could be a tree. No, that's an old Barbara Walters.
No. So, if you could say one thing to the child or youth sitting in their room on a park bench swing at the edge of a train track, wherever they are, where they go to think. And this child has the audacity to aspire to be something more than what others may think they have a right to expect or deserve to be. What would you tell them?
Believe in yourself. Trust in everything that is good in yourself. Work hard and be generous as much as you can.
Words of wisdom from Titi Ronda.
That's right.
Thank you for being, I feel like we were the two Titis over here. Thank you for being on Fish Out of Agua.
I love it. Thank you
Hug
so
in the
much.
Air.
You could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not resist when I saw little Nikki grind. So many devices, everything that money could buy. She said, sign your name on the dotted line. The lights went out and Nikki started to grind. Nikki. Castle started spinning. Oh, maybe it was my brain. I can't tell you what you did to me, but my body will never be the same. Heaven, will you kick your behind? Oh, just show you no mercy, but just shout up. Shout up, show you how to cry. Can't make it. Oh. Woke up the next morning. Nikki wasn't there. I looked all over. All I found was a phone number on the stairs. It said, thank you for a funky time. Call me up whenever you wanna grind.
We're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Prince with Darling Nikki from Purple Rain in 1984. Another song that Rhonda handpicked for her episode. And Guess what, kids? That's our show! Oh my god, I can't believe another show is in the can! Yes, this has been Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn, and I have an announcement to make. I want to invite the entire world to come to Radio Free Brooklyn's December show, December Christmas show, on Monday, next Monday, December 18th at 7 p.m. This one is hosted by Elan Danziger, who runs the Lost and Rewound show, and it features music from a lot of people, none of whom I can remember now. I'm sorry, I only remember the storytellers. One of whom is David Lawson, and the other one is Amber Drea, who you will hear on a future episode. Once again, that's Monday, December 18th, 7 p.m. at the Footlight, 465 Seneca Avenue in Ridgewood. Tickets are just $5, and stay around for the New York Talent Show immediately afterwards. Okay, we're going to close with the last of Rhonda's pick. It's, again, from Outkast. It's from their Speaker Box with three X's album, The Love Below, in 2003, and it's one of my favorite party songs of all time. Hey, y'all! So stay tuned for Brooklyn Bandstand next, kids, and we'll see yous next week. Woo-hoo!
Then what makes something work?